I didn't know like Regex is AI now. That's
Right.
that's a
Yes, right.
I honestly think that's a t-shirt that needs to happen.
Well, howdy, folks. It's Friday, and we are drunk and retired.
Holy horseshit, Batman.
Hi.
Hey.
Hello.
What's what up, was in that box?
That is a one metric Hanukkah food kit from Katz Deli in New York City.
Oh, yeah.
I splurged on a egregious amount of food from Katz. They had like this, you know, this their brisket and all the supplies to make Reuben sandwiches and knish and latkes and kugel and babka and maybe one other thing I forgot.
So I feel like you made a few of those words up. So I knew Reuben, I knew latke. Yeah. And I knew Kegel, but I didn't know the others.
No, not Kegels. Those are like the little, yeah, those are different. You could be doing those right now, but that's not related. Kugel is a really an atrocious looking collection of food, but it's like a noodle. It's a noodle dish with sugar. So it's like a sweet noodle dish.
Oh, okay.
That yep. I don't know how, it's maybe traditionally Polish, but it's very Jewish in origin in my head. Mm-hmm. I would need a food historian to correct it. And then knish are like these kind of creamier potato type bites. Mm-hmm. And as opposed to latkes, which are shredded potatoes with egg. Mm-hmm. And then a babka.
Wait, a babka is just a hash brown, isn't it?
Latke? Effectively, okay. it should be shredded potato with a little egg and a little flour in oil. But yeah, if you want to do them on the cheap, McDonald's hash browns do kind of cover the bases. But tonight is the first night of the 8 days of Hanukkah. So
that's right.
Got some snacks ready. And
well, Merry Hanukkah to you.
Yeah,
yes, happy Hanukkah.
Oh, bonus points to JJ here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
L'chaim.
L'chaim, my friend. Yes. L'chaim. Yeah.
Yes.
But funny enough, Paul, I thought you might know babka from the latest season of Great British Bake Off.
Right. It's like a cake thing, right? Because I think I've had a chocolate babka before.
Yeah, it's like usually like a chocolate and cinnamon breaded. I think it's technically a bread. So like a braided bread with chocolate and cinnamon through it. It's like absolutely phenomenal.
Yeah, I think when I've had it, I've been expecting cake. And so it's been a disappointment.
That makes a lot of sense. It would be a very sad. I do love cake. And if you're expecting like a fluffy cake and you bite into bread, you're like, who fucked this up? Yeah, so it's going to be a fat and sassy Hanukkah on this end.
Nice, as it should be.
How are you guys doing?
Yeah, pretty good. Maybe I'll make some latkes. Latke
would be the singular. Okay. Latke is the plural.
All right. Well, maybe I'll make some of them for dinner because I've made them before with some success, and we have potatoes that need eating.
Do it, man.
There you go.
I will consider you my honorary.
You put
Jewish
sour cream on them, or like a? Can you do like a jelly or a like preserve?
There is an epic battle that between the latkes with sour cream being in one corner and latkes with applesauce being in
applesauce,
the other.
Applesauce, that's right.
Applesauce is traditional. I could see you doing like a really interesting, like, you know, apple jelly type thing or like an apple butter. Could be lovely. I could, you know, raspberry or something. You could spice it up with anything then. It's just a vessel, a crispy, oily vessel.
I'm... I don't know if you've noticed, but I'm pretty white, and that means I can take anyone's food and make it terrible and call it my own.
Yeah, it's cool, man. I'm of the similar complexion branch of this family tree, but you know, I like to think I've got 5,000 years of somewhat good taste in there, or at least like one-liners, a lot of puns.
As a joke for some of my Chinese friends, I made mapo tofu tacos for lunch. And for extra inauthentic points, I used microwavable instant rice. they thought it was funny. So, you know, I'm glad that my joke landed on the right side of cultural appropriation.
Yeah, it really is a question of at what point does it become a hate crime?
Right.
Like I look at like GBB again had rainbow bagels as one of their technical challenges. And Jewish Twitter that I follow just was not having it. They're like, this is offensive.
What's GBB? I don't know what that is.
Oh, the Great British Bake Off.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah.
So for some context, why are we spending a bit of time talking about the GBB?
Yeah, we're talking about baked goods, my friend, because Paul here has inspired a Kubernetes-focused bake-off for it's the Kubernetes Celebration Day this weekend, or Celebration Weekend this weekend. And one of the days will have a Great British Bake Off-esque bake-off, thanks to this gentleman here.
Right. And now I learned while I was doing this that I think in the UK it's called the Great British Bake Off, and in the US it's called the Great British Baking Show. Is that right?
It is. I keep saying Great British Bake Off out of tradition.
Yeah.
But
So I've been calling it Bake Off, but I think most people know it as Baking Show.
I feel like saying GBB is a secret handshake.
Yeah.
It's like.
You're part of the in crowd. Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice.
So that's been fun to do. At first I thought it would be like a silly little like side project until I realized that I now have to like produce a show with like 12 people and somehow get it onto YouTube and not look like a giant mess of like a Zoom video. So I've spent several days buried inside of OBS, which is open broadcasting software. Trying to figure out how that happens, how that works. And I'm nearly there.
So JJ, I feel like you'd appreciate this. Like Paul, I mean, to be fair, Paul, you could have just been a shitty WebEx type host and just kind of passed the mic around, but he's going all out, like building like stages and asking people to get green screens so he can fit us all into the different scenes. JJ, you use OBS a good bit, right?
Yeah. So CZ hinted towards it earlier when we were streaming about what he's been doing. And it's like, I'm just happy he finally learned what OBS Ninja is and realizing that there is actual power there. So I'm very excited to see when he comes out of his adventure, what's that, Ninja his quest shell? That he's on. Yeah, he'll start seeing OBS the way I see it, which is great.
Can one of you explain for the crowd what an OBS Ninja is?
Sure. So OBS Ninja is a fairly simple, in theory at least, like static website. And basically what it does is it wires you up with WebRTC connections to each other. And WebRTC is how you can do like webcams, screen shares, and microphones over over HTML. Like not really HTML, but over like the World Wide Web, over like through your browser, through Internet Explorer. And so basically you have it, but you have to like craft URLs for people so that they're going into like a specific room and they have a specific name and they have the right password. And you can put in the URL like what things they see versus what things they send you and stuff like that. So it can be very complex to get set up. And also the other thing it does is because it's a pretty fairly static website is it's not actually hosting any content. So like when you do a Zoom call, everything goes to Zoom. It does processing and then sends it out. With OBS Ninja, everybody is sending everybody everything. And so it's like this like meshed peer-to-peer thing. So if I'm showing my webcam, I'm sending that to all 12 people. And all 12 of those people are potentially sending their webcams to all 12 people as well. And if you know anything about doing video conferencing or video over the internet, it's pretty CPU intensive. So by the time you're doing that many of them, it can become quite a challenge. So I've been trying to figure out how to do it with a minimal bandwidth footprint so that everyone can actually connect and do things.
It's super smart, Paul. Like I feel like it's appropriate to a baking show that you're, you know, hand selecting artisanal web sockets for us to share.
Well, I was going to use Skype or Teams because they have a thing called NDI, which basically lets you break each person out into their own video stream going into OBS. Okay. And that's super useful. But the moment I mentioned either of them, I got several people were like, oh, I can't use that, or that's always crashing for me, or I don't want to. And so I thought, well, I would just, if we're doing WebSockets, everyone has at least one web browser that probably works with it. And so I will just take on 2 days of extra pain so that they don't have to run an app that they don't want to install on their phone. That's the kind of sacrifices I am willing to make.
That's just the quality of content coming from this said ninja.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so I've used OBS Ninja before. The struggle I've had with it is when you do desktop sharing with it as well, issues with what am I going to say, like audio feedback loops and things like that. And what a lot of people do is they'll use OBS Ninja for video, but then they'll use Zoom or something else for desktop sharing. And I'm like, well, let's just use one app and not complicate things. So that's why I've always been pretty strict with, if we're going to do any kind of stream with a desktop share, we're just going to use like Zoom or Skype. And it may look a little bit like Zoom or Skype versus like a really nicely put together thing, but it's just going to work.
Hell yeah. A lot of lessons learned. I dig it.
I have no problem using Zoom as my desktop sharing because, to CZ's point, the desktop sharing on OBS Ninja is a nightmare. But normally when I do it, the reason why I really like OBS Ninja is that it's really easy to make the scenes how I want them to, like, because the actual image is sitting there, so I can drag and drop people around. If things don't, like, if somebody changes something on the screen share, it doesn't mess with all the boxes or anything like that. Yeah. It's very, very static. And I've learned how to create scene names, or they're not scene names, but in essence, scene names in front of my rooms on OBS Ninja. So I can just give the same URL out to people and it comes out with their own unique ID inside the control room that I can just drop in with like a copy and paste, and everybody shows up where they're supposed to, which is really nice.
Yeah. Yeah. And that works really well when you figure that out. And the other thing, cause it is a fairly simple static web page. You could, if you want to, you could like host it yourself in GitHub Pages and have your own domain and stuff like that.
Yeah. The gentleman, I think his name is Steve, maybe, who is actually the developer behind it, is really active on the subreddit for OBS Ninja. Mm-hmm. And if you actually read about why he made it and like what he's walked through and what he's doing, he's got a little cult following, which is kind of cool. And it's like, it's a complete labor of love. He has no desire to like he's just like, I'm just doing this because I wanted to learn how to do this stuff. And it turns out it works out really well. So I'm still doing it kind of thing, cool. Which is one of the great stories of open source in the way, like, he had an itch, he got a way to scratch it. And now it turns out it's one of the de facto ways you use OBS now.
So I thought he worked at Stage 10 and...
He used to, or something to that effect.
Okay.
Like he's got a whole like slew of stuff you can see in the subreddit. Anyways. Yeah.
Cool.
Hey, while we're on the topic of attempting to share things over the internet, this is the season that many of us would be around a kitchen table with a bunch of family members and asked to fix their email or some other pop-up on their laptop. And a lot of us are going to love that, right? Like, to not be tech support for people that don't know what computers do.
I don't know what computers
do. I don't think that's... it's not gender or age based. There are a lot of talented technologists of all ages and genders, but man, are they a burden. But do you have any, either of you have a good solution to gain remote control over someone's desktop so we can?
Absolutely.
Because I am fucking struggling. I want to get like TeamViewer installed again, but it's too much to coordinate somebody doing that.
It's the easiest thing in the world. So there's two things you want to do. The first thing is you move to the other side of the planet, and it makes it much harder for them to ask you to help because there's usually someone closer to them.
Oh, that's a really good move. Right?
When they still find you, and they do still find you, Google or Chrome, I should say, has a thing you can go to, and there's like a Chrome extension. And they install it, you install it, and they say, ask for help, you say, give help, and you have like their desktop in your web browser. Now, I'm sure Google is scraping your like bank account numbers and stuff like that while it's happening.
Yeah,
but at the same time, you know, it's easy, so who cares?
They already probably have blood samples exactly. of me, like from some time I yeah. fell and they scraped it up. So
I had that awesome. Dilemma a few months ago when I was helping some colleagues set up some streaming stuff, and we ended up using that, and it was wonderful. Because I was like, oh, well, surely at VMware we have a tool to do this, and turned out we didn't. And so then I went on like a quest to try and find something, and this was the easiest thing without spending money or doing weird like trialware kind of things.
Yeah, I was surprised at how horrific the experience was just to share desktops with somebody who wasn't familiar with Zoom. And then I could have sworn Zoom had a, you know, share mouse type feature, but maybe they added it to some tier that I'm not a part of.
Yeah, but, if you do a share desktop, there's usually a way to, like click a button to say give remote control, and then the person on the other end can do request. But you might be right, that might be like an enterprise feature that free accounts don't have access to.
Yeah, I had Zoom's documentation up. I'm looking at I was running it on a Mac too, just to make sure Linux wasn't somehow the challenge, and just absolutely nothing. Did not work, did not pass go. But cool, I'll give this a go. Thanks, Paul. And we'll add it to show notes for others who don't look forward to it, but it's worth doing anyway.
There's I'll see if I can dig it up too. I was just spending a moment to look for it. There's a great cartoon that I send out to friends and family when they do ask me to do this, where it's like where I am in the computer hierarchy of computers, where like, this is your problem. I deal in servers over here that has nothing to do with your printer or to that effect. It's a great little in love JJ, or it's just like love, put your name in here. It's like a way to like give to grandma or grandpa, kind of be like, this is what I do. I'm sorry, I can't fix your printer kind of thing. It's a great
message. Sounds like a kind of passive aggressive like way of telling
them. You said leave the fucking country. And
yeah, like you want to talk passive aggressive? You moved across how many continents? Yeah.
You have no ground to stand on. None.
Oh, that's too funny. That's amazing. No, thanks. Yeah, I'll take the meme too. It's always good to shame people when you help them.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Oh man. Okay, so we've got some bake-offs happening in our life. We understand how to connect over the internet with or without web RC happening. What else is going on?
Should we, since we've been talking a little bit of food, should we do a quick roundup like over the last, I guess, 2 weeks? Because we skipped a week because of Thanksgiving.
Oh,
what all have you done recently? So I think we did talk about Thanksgiving cooks.
We did.
Yes.
So yeah, what have you done since?
I only hung out with I've only been chilling with Instapots. So I used the Instant Pot a few times, cooked it, like, you know, 3 pounds of chicken in like 5 minutes, and made like a poor man's General Gao's sauce, like a slightly spicy, tangy sauce with a bunch of random stuff. It was nice. And then I made like instant ramen broth for some, and then I used that to make some miso soup. That was pretty bomb. So nice. Playing around with that. I've been a little lazy on the food cooking. I keep meaning to get some kind of bird and brine it and kind of do a redo of Thanksgiving since I oversalted.
All right. So here's your mission for the next one.
Yeah, tell me.
Do a chicken, but get a smallest chicken, right? Do the dry brine, spatchcock it, cook it, and then use the bones to do a chicken stock in the Instant Pot afterwards.
I'm like, I want to, but why? Why? Like, what's what's so special about stock? Like, if it was pork bones, I guess like making a tonkatsu style broth would be kind
of like, don't you make like stews and broths? And like, if you're making a steak, don't you do a quick like pan sauce or anything?
Dude, I'm making this all up and you haven't taught me that yet.
Okay.
I'm a blank slate, sir.
Like, when you cook, do you not have like bottles or cans of like store-bought chicken stock that you use?
JJ, do you see how like confused Paul is right now? This is very satisfying.
It is.
We do in fact have stock in this house. I'd say my partner is the champion of the stew, especially like the low and slow hot crock pot soup. She makes really good ones, ends up blending up parts of it, and like
All right, so if you do that and you use a store-bought stock, if you make your own chicken stock with bones from like a grilled or smoked chicken or whatever, and you use that, it's going to be so much better.
Okay.
Right? Because you not only get like the better flavors, because it's not like some massive factory mass-produced thing with like weird parts and leftovers.
Wait. Pause. To make a stock, I take bones. Oh, so I went to go get a Mexican chicken, right? The Mexican chicken place, you got a whole chicken, right? Or whatever. Right.
Yep.
And then I finish those bones. Do I just put them in a crock pot with a little bit of water and then come back later, X number of hours later? Or is there more to making that stock?
Great question. You just described what a stock is. So usually you would do some aromatics and stuff as well. So you might throw in some bay leaves. You might throw in some like juniper, some whole pepper, maybe some like thyme if you're into that.
What about like
vegetables? None of us have enough time.
and then you're almost always
sage, JJ.
Hey, I like it. we're gonna make Paul cry.
what a mint conversation we're having.
Oh, that was also not only did you participate, but that was poorly done.
Yeah.
Oh, great.
Yeah, so you often put like an onion, like you just chop an onion. Like you don't even have to peel it if you don't want, because actually the brown skin of the onion will give color. Just don't put the like dirty stems in. Even things like green onion tops, carrots, celery. So they're the three kind of common vegetables. None of them are mandatory. If you're going to put any of the three in, onion is definitely the most important, then carrots or celery to taste. But totally just like, roasted chicken bones and onion and like a little bit of salt, and that's going to make you a brilliant stock. Anything else you add is going to be a bonus.
Okay, so what's like the bone to, you know, quarts of water, milliliters?
Yes,
I just ratio. Make sure maybe there's it is yes. I just make sure it's covered. Like as long as like the water covers the most of the ingredients, and like onions might float and stuff, so like who cares? But as long as the bones are more or less all submerged, it's exactly what you want.
And is it
if you're doing an Instant Pot, it's like a closed system, so you're not going to lose any water. You're doing like it in a pot on a pan, you usually do a little bit more water because you're going to lose some to evaporation. If you're doing a crock pot, you'll lose a little bit of evaporation too, but not normally all that much.
And is it like an overnight thing? Like I've done beef, let me rephrase this. I've done sous vide beef ribs, right? Mm-hmm. And then I've thrown those in the crock pot for like when they decide to fall apart was when I was like, oh, it's done. Is that the same thing with chicken? Because I've never done a chicken broth. And the more I'm thinking about this, the more I think I'm going to get a Mexican chicken and do this tonight. Do I do this overnight?
It depends what you do. Like, it depends on your cooking vessel, right? So if you use a crock pot, I would do the equivalent overnight. If you're doing it in a pot at like a slow simmer, like 3 or 4 hours. If you're doing it in an Instapot, like 60 minutes.
Yeah, it's going to be low in a crock pot overnight. Yeah. So when I wake up in the morning, I just smell amazing chicken broth throughout my
house. Yes, absolutely. Yep. So basically any food scraps from dinner that you think would go well in like a stock, just throw in there, top it up with water, add a little bit of like anything you have aromatic wise, garlic, onion, bay leaves, and then just...
I hear Tesla's a good stock. Hey, nothing. Come on.
Absolutely nothing.
Neither of your faces even moved when I said no. That. Like, didn't even
there move. Is zero electricity in that.
Yeah.
Pun. Hey, yes.
I was trying to remember whatever his weird baby name is, so I could make a pun off that, but I couldn't even remember.
Oh, like isn't it just a bunch of weird characters?
Niner. Yeah, something like that.
There's a niner in there.
Well, I just think it's great. Like he just announced that he's moved to Texas. To him, Joe Rogan, and the shouty guy, Alex Jones, can all move in together and
pretty much
hang out.
It's gonna be a lot of MMA and drinking whiskey in a backyard shooting off shotguns.
I feel like I'm watching. Yeah, it's like there would be like a real life episode of Big Mouth is how I think about it. The show on Netflix right now about puberty. Like, I feel like they're just a group perpetually going through that.
Yeah.
Which, if you are into awkwardly reliving puberty, Big Mouth season 4 came out and is ridiculous and perfect.
Right.
So
are we at food wise? Stuff. Hang on. We're talking about we didn't cover the food.
He's right. I covered what I was doing. JJ, what have you been cooking?
Damn it. I was trying to skip over me.
You can skip here if you've got nothing useful to add.
This is an optional podcast.
I get harassed. No, I'm kidding. In all seriousness, I've been just kind of going through the same things that I've been cooking recently. Though I did another experiment with sous vide steak over longer than you should. So we've mentioned this earlier in the other podcasts where I accidentally sous vide a steak for like 3 days and it was in air quotes edible. Right. So this time around, I did it for 24 hours instead of 3 days. And it was okay. The food, it was fine. I got a really nice, seasoning on top of it. And we seared it inside of a pan on a cast iron. So we got a nice crust to it. But the one thing I want to bring up about it, and the reason why I'm bringing this up, is that the color of when you're sous vide steak is depressing. Is it just because of the way the heat is doing it? Like the only way to get like a red steak is like on actual flames, right? Like,
wait, hang on. Like the inside of the steak, sous vide should be red if it's rare.
We're talking outside or inside?
I mean, maybe if you're cooking it like an asshole for 24 hours, it might be a weird color. But if you get like a ribeye and you sous vide it for an hour at 125 and then you blast it on a cast iron to sear it off, when you slice into it, the center should be like beautifully like reddy pink.
Yeah, it must be the 24 hours. Like, well, see, I'm making the mistakes here so I can learn, right? Right. Like, because I've read somewhere, or some friend of mine who worked at a restaurant was like, or ex-friend, I should say. Anyway, point being is they would sous vide steaks for like days on end. They would have the steaks in like ready form so they could pull it out, sear it, and then give it to you. And I'm like, really? And I'm trying to emulate that. And everything I've done trying to like do long-term steaks in sous vide have failed drastically.
So yeah, whoever told you that
ribs are fine. Well, ribs are fine though.
Well, that's like, because that's a different cut of meat, right? It's a completely different cut of meat. It's got different types of muscles. It's got different amounts of collagen and connective tissue. Right. In the same way, you don't cook cook a ribeye exactly the same way you cook a fillet, right? You cook them differently because they have different makeups. It's the same with the other cuts. So you can get away with doing short ribs for like 48 or 72 hours at low temperatures because there's so much connective tissue and the muscle type is different. Whereas for like a regular steak that you would grill, you would never want to do more than 2 or 3 hours. So absolutely a restaurant might hold it for a couple of hours, like through service. But there's no way they would do it overnight or multiple days, unless it is something like a 72 hour short rib. And like those things, like a 72 hour short rib, I feel like everyone does it when they get a sous vide and then they never do it again. Cause it's kind of a gimmick. It's kind of cool to have like a medium rare short rib that's like fork tender, but like it's not particularly delicious. And it is kind of a pain in the butt to run a sous vide for 72 hours.
Well, at least in my household, it's as close as we can get to real barbacoa. So it seems to work really well for us. And it's cheap. It's like $25 to get three meals of meat, which is kind of nice. But
anyway, I mean, sorry, you say Kroger, it's the only way to get barbacoa, but you have like a big green egg in your backyard.
That's true.
So I have to call bullshit on you.
Well, I should say at the time of me learning how to do this stuff,
yeah.
Now I'm much more seasoned, pun intended, with my big green egg. So I feel much more confident in what I'm doing.
Right. No, this is good. Like no shame in your game, JJ. Like I think you're updating some mental models on what's happening there. And you did remind me, I started reading on food and cooking.
Harold McGee. The
kitchen. It is so satisfying.
Isn't it great?
150 pages in and I've gotten through milk and partly through eggs. Like the whole history of use in human, life and kind of like what's actually happening, like when you whip an egg, like what's happening to the proteins and it's super fascinating. I'm excited to get to the beef part, especially because of what you're talking about, because I've been curious about the collagen and like the fat contents of different parts. So
yeah,
highly recommend if you're down for reading a big tome of
a quick science. Jump back to the stock discussion.
Yeah.
When you make a good stock, there's enough collagen and stuff in the bones that it will sometimes set like jello in the fridge.
Oh, funny.
Right.
And that's happened to me multiple times.
Right. And what that does is that like gelatiny kind of mouthfeel. Yeah, I said it, mouthfeel.
Yeah.
Actually translates into like a thick unctuousness in like the resulting stew or whatever it is you cook at the end that you don't get with a store-bought stock. And it's like really important or really good for if you're saying making a risotto, collagen and having that
gelatinous
really improves the overall end of the risotto. And what folks will sometimes do to emulate that is they will actually add like unflavored gelatin to store-bought stock.
Really?
Oh, funny.
And the other good trick is if you don't have stock and you have like you're making a soup or you're having something that wants stock. So one of the primary things that a stock gives you is like that like meaty umami kind of flavor. JJ. And you know what else gives you like a meaty umami kind of flavor? MSG.
Oh, shit.
If you make something that you would normally put like canned chicken stock in, just put a couple of teaspoons of MSG in and it will be super similar.
Mm. That's so wild.
Nice.
Okay, quick side quest. Why was MSG demonized and why are you saying
racism.
It's not going to kill me?
Yeah, racism is the exact answer.
Yeah. For real?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was that whole like Chinese restaurant, like belly syndrome thing that some doctor made up and has been since debunked many, many times through like double blind testing and stuff. Apart from people with maybe some kind of actual medical condition, like MSG isn't affecting you, isn't making you sick, isn't giving you bloated stomachs.
Isn't there it's progressing enzyme in your body also? Like, isn't it? Hear that somewhere?
You don't make it in your body, but like you get it from everything. Like tomatoes have it. Like
that's right.
So mushrooms have it. Like so many foods you eat have like the glutamates, right?
Yeah, it's just monosodium glutamate.
Glutamate is basically like a processed version of it, usually made from some form of seaweed, and they just process it down and turn it into a powder.
So
it's still mostly. Go ahead.
I was going to say, I want to wrap up the stock conversation real quick with a very simple straw poll statement or question. Where does egg drop soup fall into this world? Because if you're going to have really good chicken stock, egg drop soup is a natural progression. Is it worth making more egg drop soup in your life because you have good chicken stock now?
I mean, egg drop soup is delicious. So absolutely.
It's one of my all-time favorites.
Like any of those, like that range of like Chinese soups, incredible. Mm-hmm. Like the hot and sour soup. That is where it's at. That is one of my favorite. And you know, most of the hot in a hot and sour actually comes from white pepper.
I thought it was pepper. Yeah. It's like very front of the face hot, not like that back of the throat hot. Yeah.
And then like good traditional hot and sour soup have some really interesting ingredients like dried daylily stems and like tofu skins, and so it's a lot of fun to make if you've never made it before.
All right,
so I highly recommend it.
Sometime over the winter, the three of us make a pact to try one of these soups.
Yeah, we should make one together.
That'd be really fun.
I want to level up my egg drop soup. That's the reason why I started that statement, is that I know I can make it better, and I would love to know how to do that.
So one of the good ways of doing that. Oh, go ahead.
No, is this how we hallway track? Like, do we actually set up like a Twitch and live stream us learning to cook together?
We could. There's no reason we couldn't.
Stopping us. Somebody already has mastered OBS. Might as well let him run the whole thing.
That's right. One of the cool things a lot of the Asian soups do is they'll actually like poach a whole chicken in like water and make sort of a quasi stock, and then they'll like cut up the chicken and they'll use the cooking water and sort of then recombine them back later as some kind of like finished soup.
That's so cool. It's funny you bring that up. I've been studying a recipe for chashu, like Japanese braised pork belly, and
that was way too slow. I'm sorry.
We expect nothing better.
But I was thinking, like, I feel like there's a bunch of broth left over that you can use to make the I'm blanking on it. The tare. Thank you.
Yes.
And I was just thinking, like, yeah, of course, this all makes sense. Like, because then you're adding basically all the flavor back into it, and it'll complement. I'm really excited about this recipe.
So you could use that sauce to then like soak some eggs to do like a Ajitama style egg. And then you could then use that sauce to help flavor like the soup or ramen or whatever you're having with it. So win.
It's a triple win. Okay, back to you, Paul. What have you been cooking?
Oh, I get a turn. So lately I've been on a bit of a flan kick.
Is that a thing, or is that like a habit you kick, or like a kick, like a good habit?
I don't know.
I guess I don't totally know what flan is other than like fluffy egg, right?
Yeah. So I mean, there's multiple ways of people making flan, and it's kind of there's a group of things like creme caramel, creme catalan, flan. They're all kind of the same thing, like a set cooked custard with like a runny like caramel over the top. But the flan that I've been making is basically you take it's super like dead simple. You take a can of condensed milk, a can of evaporated milk, like half a dozen eggs and some vanilla, and you mix that together really well. You strain it a few times to pull out any like air bubbles, because you don't want any air bubbles in it when you cook it. And then you make caramel, which is probably the hardest bit, right? The easiest way to do it is don't try and make dry caramel. Don't just start with a dry pot of sugar. It'll take you an hour and you'll hate your life. You just get your sugar, you add like enough water to sort of wet it, and it will melt into that water. The water will evaporate, and then the sugar will then start to caramelize. So you basically, you make that caramel, you pour it into the bottom of a baking dish, you pour the custard mix on top of it, you put it in the oven in a water bath. So the water comes sort of halfway up it, and you cover it and you bake it for like an hour. You bring it out, you let it chill down, and you flip it upside down. And of course, when you flip it upside down, the caramel is now on top. And so when you pull the pan off, it sort of dribbles over the edges. Brilliant. And when you get it right, it is delicious. I've recently been making flan con queso, which is basically you add softened, what's the cheese? Like Philadelphia cream cheese. No, Philadelphia cheese. What's that called?
Cheddar cheese.
Is it cream cheese? Yeah.
Yeah.
So a block of that at room temperature, add that when you like blend the ingredients together. And it gives you, like, it helps smooth out the texture a little bit, and it helps stop the air bubbles from forming. Because if you cook it with, like, and the custard's been aerated, you get, like, bubbles, and you get, like, a kind of a weird mouthfeel as you encounter those bubbles. So the cheese helps offset that. It does make it a little bit cheesecakey, which for a lot of people is a good thing. For me, it's not. I'm not a cheesecake fan. But it's still distinct enough from cheesecake to be palatable for me. So I do that, but what I've been doing lately is using a can of evaporated goat's milk instead of regular milk. And I've been using a little bit of fish sauce in the caramel. And nice. So you get some sort of like earthy, funky undertones from the two of those that add a little bit of savoriness to it and a little bit of funk, but don't sort of turn it away from being a dessert.
Hell yes. Mm. That sounds absolutely magical, Paul.
It is delicious. And you can do it as like one big one, or you can totally do it in like smaller ramekins as like individual servings.
Yum. JJ, are you a flan eater?
My wife makes a really nice choco flan that I've had a handful of times, but in general, I stay away from it in general. I didn't grow up on it. So it's not one of those things that I go out of my way for. I know I'm missing something, but you know, it's just never really landed with me.
You also have extenuating reasons not be eating copious amounts of desserts.
That's true. That is true.
Yeah.
It's like bananas. They're just fucking gross.
Oh. Well, yeah. It's probably good you find things gross that are trying to kill you. I call that evolutionarily adaptive. Well, I don't know. I don't have any memes buried.
Oh, no. Come on. One of you has to have done buried the meme. I carried the torch last time.
I got some really dumb, like, news of the weird stuff, but nothing that isn't, like, you could guess on. I found relatively interesting things. Let me see if I can pull them up real quick. But nothing to be, like, can guess around, unfortunately.
Well, you both failed me. I might have something. All right, here's one from a little bit ago. Unless you want to go, JJ.
I'm looking for it. Hang on. Go ahead.
All right. Marissa Mayer is back and she wants to fix your address book.
Marissa Mayer is back.
I feel like it's a new startup. Like a software startup to get you to organize your address book. Pretty straightforward, not very buried.
You're absolutely right. You're pretty much spot on. And I thought of this because it just seems like something that, like, so at launch, oh yeah, bring up an ad. Come on, go away. At launch, Mayer's startup is rolling out Sunshine Contacts, an address book app that will be free for iOS users who receive an invitation. I feel like, I don't know, is a contact like address book really something we need? Okay, so an address book app that relies on artificial intelligence to find and merge duplicate contacts, fill out incomplete information, and continually keep it up to date. Where's the AI in that? Like an AI to like look for two names that are the same and say, hey, these look the same.
Yeah. I didn't know like Regex is AI now. That's
right.
I honestly think that's a t-shirt that needs to happen. So there was a really cool tool. It was bought by a company called Full Contact, and they messed it up so much I don't remember the original one. But it was like an auto updating contact list. Mm-hmm. So like you have your contacts and it would go just snag URLs with them and say, is this the same person? And then keep them in sync, like keep updating their pictures, right. Keep updating mm-hmm. their websites, their job titles off LinkedIn. It was absolutely incredible. Yeah. And I paid for it back in the day. And wow.
You pay for software?
Yeah, dude. It was really, really mind blowing that way. But it is since kind of, I feel like the Apple or Android, wherever you are, is good enough these days.
That's how I feel. And I feel like it's the story you just told is the only story that a contact startup is ever going to have. Yeah. Find some way to be useful. People like it. People might start paying for it. And then one of the big players will buy it. And through integrating it with what they already have, completely ruin it.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And whoever was paying for it will stop paying for it.
That is the lifespan.
And who knows? That might be their business model. Like get acquired and get enough data to sell it to healthcare companies.
Yeah.
All right. So I got one.
They'll be bought by Google and then they will be shut down by Google.
Right? That's true.
At least they'll have a lot of good tombstones around them. So it's a pretty mighty collection. All right, JJ,
this is pretty straightforward, but I'm going to go ahead and do it. In England, William Shakespeare receives the COVID-19 vaccine.
What, pray tell?
Someone with the name William Shakespeare got the COVID-19 vaccine?
Oh, I hope it's like a historical reenactor who was trying to show that it was safe and decided
Hamlet style with the skull.
Yeah, like go in there, like do a whole spiel on it. So what happened?
It's pretty old to me. Yeah, it's literally a guy named William Shakespeare. and here's a picture of him. And he is legitimately, it goes by Bill, according to it. He doesn't actually go by William, which is the funny part.
Bill Shakespeare.
But yeah, he was one of the first ones to get the actual COVID-19 vaccine, which I thought was kind of neat.
Oh.
And it's funny, it's William Shakespeare.
Love it.
I don't get this game. Obviously, I just don't get this game.
I mean, it was fine.
The only weird thing I bookmarked this week is Cemetery of Soviet Computers.
Oh, that would have been a good one. But now it's ruined because we've already done two. Do we need to do a third? And now you can't save it for the next one.
It's a speed round.
All right, so was it Graveyard of Computers?
A Cemetery of Soviet Computers.
It's probably someplace like a... that could be a computer museum if somebody actually wanted to curate what was there, but it's really just a collection of hot garbage that no one wants to know or touch or understand. And it's probably super interesting computers all built with like Cyrillic language, like programming language and stuff like that, which would be like fascinating to see how different that is. If nothing else, just sheerly to the like different alphabet.
I think my mind went to hackers. Right, where all the CRTs on the wall or whatever it was, with all mismatched CRTs like on a wall, like with a bunch of like things flashing on it or whatever, and then the guy who's like runs the Gibson walks in with a little earbud thing, and he's like, ha ha ha, kind of thing. That's exactly what I see when I
very Mr. Robot-esque is what you're picturing, but like old timey Mr. Robot. I like it. Yeah, I mean, Paul, you pretty much nailed it. It's just like there's as it says in the article, an unremarkable industrial building, which is built built by the hundreds during Soviet time. And then it's just freaking chock full of like server grade and personal computers from the 60s and 70s. And I guess there are some pretty interesting machines that weren't known about. According to this, the Saratov 2 was a quote unquote legendary machine, but there were others that were, you know, lesser known that looked, that may have been even higher quality and more hidden than that Saratov.
Yeah, but, well, back when the Iron Curtain was up, I'm sure there was a lot of development on this kind of stuff that was done that wasn't really like collaborated on with the rest of the world. So I'm sure there's all sorts of weird and interesting things.
Like, right there. The Electronics 150 was a clone of the PDP-11. The PDP-11 started a massive portion of our industry. So they were stealing information back and forth. I was about to make the joke, do you think they could run Kubernetes on this? But I realize how not funny that is as I say it out loud.
In Soviet Russia, Kubernetes runs you?
Just runs you? Yeah.
Yeah, I feel if we kept the legs underneath that would have been funny.
See, again, like I'm just all over the place. I really am.
You really sweep the leg before we even got to the joke.
Again, totally on brand.
Yeah, it's true.
Very good. Yes. Very good. It's true. Well, that was a good lightning round, no matter how disappointed you are with this ball.
Now, JJ, I was trying to set you up before to a thing you want to talk about Google and Google Music.
Yeah, it's fine. We can hold that for another day. It's a really weird kind of obscure thing that it's fine. But I do want to talk, hopefully maybe next week, about my adventure with doing remote video content with using a remote director, a remote producer, and executive producer, because that's my experience this last week. And I have a feeling we're going to have to see more of this stuff as content producers. And I had some really interesting epiphanies during the process.
It would be interesting to see what you took away from that, given that we kind of are just like randomly ad hocing video content creation. Mm-hmm. And
this was very organized.
What you think about, exactly. So what were the pros and cons of like what you just went through versus what we have been doing? Be really interesting to hear that. So I look forward to that discussion, maybe next podcast.
Yep. Sounds good. Broberg, well, you got anything else for us, buddy?
No, I mean, looking forward if this will go live during the Kubernetes celebration. If you are contributing to anything in Cloud Native, show up, go to kates.dev/celebration and sign up and hop into the Discord from there. You'll get an auto invite.
If nothing else, you can play a bunch of like Among Us on Friday and call it work.
Yeah, it's research and community building.
Exactly. It's community building. Yeah, it's networking. Actually, it's networking.
I might get some people playing Magic the Gathering over.
Tabletop Simulator.
So much.
You love it?
Have you been using Tabletop Simulator?
I just got it loaded up, but I haven't figured, I didn't install like the deck manager from it yet, but I definitely see all the pieces.
There's a lot of pieces to it.
Maybe if we're all on there at some point, we could do a game of Clank or something.
Ooh, yeah.
You know, we should finish this podcast off, and then if we want to talk about dumb game plans, we can.
Yeah.
Wait.
All right, gentlemen.
There's a difference.
Yeah. Right?
Hey.
Bye.
Bye-bye.